Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello, welcome. It's Thursday. It is American Thanksgiving, but we're not in America. We're here on CJSF 90.1 FM from Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Stolo, Keechi-Kukutlum, and other Coast Salish peoples from the homelands of the Unkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples. My name is Jesse. Happy to be here with you this morning for Speak Up, the talk and other stuff show. Hope you enjoyed the last week's program featuring an interview done by Work Study Matthew with Sade Owele, great local R&B Afro Soul performer, musician, artist. And a quick little trip into the archives. Tape Rescue, I believe I called the segment. That's going to make a return today. The main talk part of today's show will be a digitized version of a program called Hearing the Voice of the Land, Settling and Unsettling by Cassette Culture. Which Cassette Culture is a series of half-hour documentaries on food, ecology, and rural communities. And they were run out of Guelph, Ontario in the 90s. We'll get a little bit more info on that before you hear it. It is the sound of the cassette, though. It's kind of fun. That's coming up. But first, as is tradition here on Thursday mornings, we'll get a little bit of music, starting with some local stuff. This is perhaps the king of the Vancouver. No, you know what? Let's go as Jeff has titled himself, the homecoming queen of Vancouver's independent music scene. It's Devours, and this track from the record, Homecoming Queen, is called Hairspin. Thank you.
Dear listeners, as you may have heard, Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, is blocking Canadian access to all content created by news providers, including this radio station, in response to the Online Broadcasting Act. Access to local news and information matters to everyone, and while radio stations use their airwaves to keep you informed, we also use social media to share local news, events, and initiatives, and even content about our upcoming programming. We need you to write your MP and convey your concerns. Learn more and find a letter template for your MP on our website. Thank you for your support.
Cooking with magic, they talking about practice and don't know the half. This is our living room, home court advantage. You're walking your path and finding your balance, trusting your map, challenging rambles, questioning answers straight from the pack. Family, your anchors, because if life is an art, then what are we crafting? What does it mean to be happy? What is a dream without action? You're flipping the script and you're asking, can you really live without acting? Because you cannot spit without dancing. Your life is your canvas, channel your passions, change all the channels, channel the planets, damn it, be your own living example. Keep bumping your drafts and try to keep channeling Zach. Put wings in your back and things in your bag and sing them some magic. Understand where you're standing, make it a standard, raising the standard, give them a sample. This is resistance, laugh at the system, laugh at the system. Make your sandbox, just never build your castle on sandlots. Can't kill kingdoms just by saying lots. Life full of chapters, we are the authors. We got water and air, they take it in often. Let us pick up on our calling, all of us really have something to offer.
When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers, when there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers, when there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers, when we need rain.
Reaching and teaching, we like reason when it's rhyming. The future is written on the eyelids, but we're wondering where the sign is. You are the love of your life when you need guidance. Look inside it, come with compassion, mission of passion, companions to ride with. Community striving to guide you, a compass for deciding, summon to remind us. When the fight gets tiring and life starts dying, we're still here, we're still smiling. We threw a paradise or whatever paradise is. Like if paradise ain't a paradigm, fine, there until I find mine. Paradigms in my state of mind. I hope that you know this, all my homies, I hope that you know this. You shine and you got your soul still. Shine, homie, you're on your solstice. Paradise could be wherever you thrive. Oasis could be like summer inside. Find it, wish your rhythm and time and everything aligning.
When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When there ain't no rain, there ain't no flowers. When we need rain.
Do you?
Free Voices at CJSF 90.1 FM, talking to you about
Eagle Nation Universal Production Society, We are 10 board of directors and we are rejoicing for world history. Our show is based on true stories, musical and storytelling and role playing, silent crimes broken, very interesting series of show.
And a lot of in-depth oral tradition. We play every Thursday from 3 to 4. Come and join us.
By Frankie here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby from their latest record Between Dreams, which came out in June. Local music, also before that, more local music off another record that came out earlier this year. Do You by Francis Arevalo featuring Desiree Dawson from the record Heat Check, which is amazing and great, and you should definitely check out. Heat Check out, even. And before that, Hairspin by Devours from another great record called Homecoming Queen. Three local artists. You can find all their music on Bandcamp. Or most of them will actually have, you know, physical records you could go to a record store and buy. You can also, on the Bandcamp, buy the physical record. Anyway, support local artists. It's great and fun. And it feels good. Plus, you get to listen to cool music. That's my pitch. Okay, now on to Tape Rescue. Tape Rescue. Eventually, maybe we'll have a pre-produced show segment title, but maybe I'll just keep trying Tape Rescue. Not that one. We'll see. We'll find something. We'll settle on it. I have been digging recklessly, meticulously through CJSF's cassette archive to find all sorts of cool. First of all, ton of great local music, ton of great Canadian music. We have these cassettes from mostly from the 1990s. Although some, I've found some that go back to the late 70s in our archive. Anyway, we have all these cassettes of, a lot of them are just like demo cassettes from Canadian bands that at some point in the 90s sent us a cassette, and it's sat here after being played a few times. And some of these bands have no, there's no trace of them on the internet, as far as I can tell. Some of them are more well known. You may know the band Moist, featuring David Usher, who, you know, became somewhat famous for a Vancouver-based artist in the 90s and 2000s. We have pre-David Usher Moist cassettes and the first David Usher Moist cassette. All sorts of cool stuff like that. But then there's also all these, you know, the way that we used to pre-record radio programs for broadcast was to record them onto a cassette tape and then play that cassette tape in real time on the radio. These days, you know, we have digital files, we edit them on our computer, we put them on a drive, and then it just pops up in the studio. It's magical. Back before, in the before times, you had to do all, well, I mean, way back, I don't know, at one point you had to actually edit by cutting and splicing tape, which is, you know, a lot of work. And then you would record your finished product onto a cassette, and you'd have a master cassette, and you'd duplicate that into all the other cassettes. And if you had a syndicated program, you would dub a whole lot of tapes, and then you would mail them out to various radio stations across the country or the world, depending on what you were doing. We do have stuff, you know, international programming that someone in America or Europe was sending weekly program. I don't know if they did batch shipping or how exactly that all worked, but pretty wild to think about. Now it all just comes over the internet and we don't have to worry about it. But one such syndicated program was, well, it's cassette culture, as far as I can tell, was sort of a collective slash program that put together, you know, radio documentaries in the CFRU studios in Guelph, Ontario in the 90s. And the only indication I have is a brief mention on the CFRU website of the phrase cassette culture. It links to the program page, but then there's nothing on the program page about cassette culture. So something, some sort of ghost in the machine there. And then on the cassette itself, there is a street address for cassette culture in Guelph, Ontario, which it's just the basement suite of a residential house in Guelph. So a real DIY indie production, even back in March of 1993, which is when this particular program you're going to hear is from. The program is from a series produced by Cassette Culture called Hearing the Voice of the Land. And this is the initial installment of that series. It's called Settling and Unsettling. And it's about, the settling and unsettling of Canada's prairies by settlers, by white settlers, and the dispossession of Indigenous folks and farmers and people who were living in those areas at the time of white settlement, and the ongoing effects and resulting situation and relationship between Indigenous and settler folks in Canada's prairies at the time in 1993. And, you know, a lot of the In most of the issues are still, forgive me, unsettled. You know, things haven't changed a lot since 1993 in terms of the actual legal or, you know, factual realities of what's, you know, Indigenous people being dispossessed of their lands. But perhaps the conversation, the general societal awareness of the situation has changed in the time since. So this is an interesting time capsule and a well-produced program. It includes interviews with Sarah Carter, who's the author of Lost Harvests, Prairie Indian Reserve Farmers and Government Policy. Brewster Kneen, K-N-E-E-N, editor of The Ram's Horn. And Gordon Harvey, who is a farmer and land trust organizer in Strathclair, Manitoba. So I listened to this yesterday and quite enjoyed it. So I am confident you will. But regardless, I hope you enjoy this program, Settling and Unsettling, the first installment of Hearing the Voice of the Land, produced out of CFRU in Guelph, Ontario, in 1993 by Cassette Culture. Here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Certainly, if you look at prairie agriculture, or even the settlement of Ontario to a considerable extent, it never had anything to do with living on the land as it was, but of imposing, in the same way that political boundaries were imposed on the physical geography, a particular ideological construct for purposes of, in this case, the political and economic financiers who wanted to establish dominion and accumulate wealth out of this. So it was kind of a fraud perpetrated on the settlers as to why they were being given land.
Hello, I'm Craig Benjamin. Welcome to Hearing the Voice of the Land, a series of half-hour documentaries on food, ecology, and rural communities. We often hear of a crisis in North American farming. Some of the symptoms of this crisis are bank foreclosures, the collapse of rural communities, and the loss of soil and other environmental degradation. The immediate causes are apparent. Many farmers are not only deeply in debt, they are also highly dependent on expensive machinery, fertilizers, and pesticides. Nowhere are these problems more deeply felt than on the Canadian prairies. For many prairie farmers, the price they get for their wheat is simply not enough to cover their costs. Seemingly, the only choices are to build up even greater debt or to give up and move away. This, then, is the farm crisis as we read about it in the daily papers. But what of the longer history of North American farming? Are there not, in fact, deeper roots to the present crisis? The first voice you heard on today's program was that of Brewster Kneen, a Canadian agriculture critic and editor of the monthly newsletter, The Ram's Horn. In addition to Brewster Kneen, I will be speaking with prairie historian Sarah Carter. In her book, Lost Harvests, Prairie Indian Reserve Farmers and Government Policy, Sarah Carter shows how efforts by the native peoples of the prairies to establish their own farm economy in the late 1800s were deliberately undermined by the Canadian government. Over the next half hour, I want to suggest that the dispossession of native hunters and farmers in the 19th century was in fact the first crisis in Canadian farming. And in many ways, this first crisis laid the groundwork for the contemporary unsettling of rural communities. I'll conclude today's program by speaking with Gordon Harvey. Gordon Harvey is a Manitoba grain farmer who's searching for alternatives to this present system of private ownership and private debt. With Canadian Confederation in 1867, merchants, financiers, industrialists, and politicians began looking west to the grasslands of the prairies. From their perspective, the prairies were ideally suited to producing vast quantities of cheap grain, a commodity important not only for export sale, but also to feed the growing working class in the industrial centers of Ontario and Quebec. To produce this cheap grain, the business elite planned to settle the prairies with migrants from eastern Canada and with new immigrants from Europe. The only possible obstacle to this plan was the presence of the indigenous and Métis peoples who were living on the land. Historically, the Plains Cree, the Soto, and many others had traveled freely across the prairies in search of buffalo. But when the Canadian government initiated a treaty process in 1871, Negotiators found that many indigenous leaders were also anxious to reach some form of settlement. These leaders saw that the prairie's future lay in agriculture, and many fought hard for some sort of assurance that the Canadian government would assist them in establishing an independent native farm economy. Historian Sarah Carter.
Well, it seems that since about the 1850s, and certainly by the 1860s on the Western Plains, that the residents of the plains were well aware that their subsistence base was dwindling, that is the buffalo resource, and that there had to be some options that they had to explore. And I think that by the time of the treaties, this was absolutely obvious, and there really weren't that many options for peoples of the plains, and agriculture was one. And I think I showed in my book that even well before the time of the treaties, by the 1850s and the 1860s, that some Plains people, Cree and Soto or Plains Ojibwe, were beginning to experiment with agriculture in the Touchwood Hills of Saskatchewan, but also in the area that's now the Manitoba-Saskatchewan border. People were keeping cattle, they were keeping gardens, potatoes, and other crops that were more of a North American Indian variety, such as Indian corn. So there was an extension of agriculture even into this the northern plains well before the treaties.
In only 6 years, the federal government signed 7 treaties covering all the lands of the prairies and much of the land of the north. It's possible that indigenous leaders signed these treaties thinking they had won some provision for the future well-being of their people. Typically, the Canadian government promised them cattle, seed, agricultural implements, and technical training, as well as assistance in time of famine. In short, all the basics needed to establish a viable farm economy on the new reserves. What the native negotiators certainly did not know was that from the point of view of the Canadian government, the signing of the treaties extinguished both Aboriginal land title and any right to self-government. From this point on, the Canadian government would treat the indigenous peoples of the prairies neither as citizens nor as members of nations in their own right, but as wards of the state. Sarah Carter.
This is what's so appalling about the entire treaty process, which is that it was never explained to anybody, to my knowledge, during all of the negotiations of Treaties 1 to 7, that the Indian Act was to apply to them, that the Indian Act was what was going to govern their lives on these reserves, and that it potentially could affect almost every aspect of their lives and was going to prevent them in so many ways from enjoying the freedoms that they had been accustomed to. And to me, that's what is almost the most disturbing about this entire process, is that all the cards were by no means on the table. And the native negotiators, while they did do some very effective bargaining, just had no idea of what was in store for them, especially under the Indian Act and all of its subsequent amendments.
The consequences of inclusion under the Indian Act soon became apparent as the Canadian government sent more and more settlers west to the prairies. Under these circumstances, relations between new settlers and Aboriginal farmers rapidly grew competitive.
This competition really began to heat up in and around the late 1880s. By this time, there's competition already for all sorts of the resources of the West. And whenever an Indian reserve was placed where there was valuable land or whether they had access to valuable hay resources, that beginning in the late 1880s, the new settler population began to eye these properties very jealously. And the belief grew that Indian farmers, Aboriginal farmers, were not the true